Welcome to the Hinckley Institute of Politics. My name is Arya Irani, and I will be the host for today's Hinckley Forum. The Hinckley Institute was established in 1965 through the generous bequest of the Nobel Foundation and Robert H. Hinckley. The Institute is dedicated to teaching students respect for practical politics and the principle of citizen involvement in government. The Hinckley Institute offers paid internships to students of all majors here locally, in Washington, D.C., and in 35 countries around the globe. The Hinckley Institute also offers classes, the nation's only campaign management minor, week-long experiences to Washington, D.C., and $70,000 in academic scholarships. We invite students to go next door or to visit our website at www.hinckley.utah.edu to find more information. The title of today's forum is Utah Political Parties and the Utah State Legislation. Our first guest is Jim DeBacchus. Jim DeBacchus came to Utah from Massachusetts to go to college in 1971. Going to Provo was a necessity as there are no good institutions of higher learning in Massachusetts. He has called Utah home ever since. DeBacchus was involved in radio and television from 1976 to 1989. He has worked for all three major network television stations in Salt Lake, as well as numerous talk radio stations. DeBacchus was recognized with national awards during his time as a journalist/talk show host. He was a guest on several national television shows, including NBC's Today Show, CNN, and The Phil Donahue Show. DeBacchus was known as Mr. Democrat during his 13 years on Utah radio. Starting as a volunteer intern, DeBacchus eventually ended up as a partner with a small chain of stations that he sold in the mid-1990s. Sensing opportunity in 1989 with the imminent collapse of communism, DeBacchus quit on-air broadcasting and moved to Eastern Europe. He spent most of the next 20 years in Russia, successfully developing an art business and funding bright, emerging capitalists. DeBacchus was the founding chair for the Utah Pride Center and Equality Utah. Jim was remained an active Democrat through the years, giving support and encouragement to office holders and candidates. He began his political service as a volunteer for candidate Scott Matheson during his first run of governor of Utah in 1976. In July of 2011, Jim was elected chair of the Utah Democrat Party. He calls his current position, which only pays a dollar a year, the most engaging, fun, challenging, and exciting thing I have ever done. I love Utah Democrats. Our other guest is Stan Lockhart. Stan Lockhart's Utah roots actually began in 1935 when his grandparents met in a BYU botany class. With that, a tradition was born. His parents met at BYU. Stan went to BYU on a leadership scholarship, graduating with degrees in business management and Spanish. There he met his wife, Becky, and they currently live in Provo with their three children, Hannah, Emily, and Stephen. His wife is a registered nurse specializing in obstetrics and is a state representative. Professionally, Mr. Lockhart is the Utah spokesperson for Micron Technology Incorporated. Before Micron, he was a computer solutions professional consulting business on a leading-edge technology. In state government, he is the chair of the Utah Technology Industry Council and a past member of the State Council on Workforce Services. He's a past president of the Boys and Girls Club of Utah County. He's an Eagle Scout who currently participates in BSA as a district program chair and is a recent recipient of the district's Award of Merit. Mr. Lockhart serves on the board of directors of the Utah Information Technology Association, Utah Taxpayers Association, the Utah Foundation, and Utah Energy Users Association. He served on the board of directors of the Utah Manufacturing Association for 6 years. He has also served on the Provo/Orem Chamber of Commerce Government Review Council and the Salt Lake City Chamber of Commerce Legislative Affairs Committee. He is a board member of the Provo Rotary Club. He also spent 8 years as a Utah high school basketball official. Currently, Mr. Lockhart is an active in the community coaching youth basketball and baseball leagues. Mr. Lockhart is a recipient of the prestigious Ronald Reagan Award for his service in the Republican Party, where he has served in virtually every grassroots position, including the chairman of the Utah County Party. Mr. Lockhart values public service. He got his start in the city government as a neighborhood chair. He served on the Provo City Council for 4 years and was his chairman in 2002. He previously served on the Provo Planning Commission, Board of Adjustment, and Provo Library Board, and he was a part of the Provo 2000 Task Force that updated Provo's general plan. Please join me in welcoming both of our guests today.
We're done? Okay,
thank you.
What's the format here? What do you want us to do?
Go ahead.
Go ahead. Look, so I was expecting Thomas Wright, who's out of town, who's the chair of the party. Stan is the former chair, so the cadence may be a little wrong. Last time we came to a class, I don't think it was your class.
It was.
And we just took each other's position. So that I started up, it was during the campaign, and said what a great job Mitt Romney would do as president, and how we needed to destroy completely this healthcare idea, and what a horrible 4 years it had been. And then Thomas just went on and took the opposite approach, and it was amusing to us because we'd done this so many times. That we had fun arguing the other person's position. Let's talk a little bit about the state and what my vision as a Democrat and as a senator and as the leader of the Democrats is of Utah, and where I think Republicans have led us over the last 30 years. They say they will take credit for it. I say they have to be responsible for where the state is right now. So as you look around, there's a lot of good things about our state. But a lot of those things are in spite of this real 30-year one-party reign. And if you begin in education, we rank 51st, and we have for the last 30 years. And we're comfortable being 51st. It's okay. There is no plan to move us from 51st in funding and education to 49th or 48th or 45th. We are comfortable there. And we call it a tremendously successful year in education when we fund education at 51st. We're in such a rut that we believe the status quo of us having the lowest funding is okay. There is no vision. Our governor has no plan to crawl us out of this situation. And it is destroying a lot of Utah lives. We can't compete. We're not competing. Guess where we rank in classroom size? 50th. We have the largest classrooms in the country, and I hear again and again, well, classroom size doesn't matter. Funding doesn't matter. What about achievement scores? Do they matter? They're going down precipitously. Utah, for many, many years, was able to take its 50th funding and kind of squeeze out of that a reasonable result in test scores because of the homogeneity of our children. Not anymore. Take a look. We've dropped from 15th or 16th in achievements in math and science for fourth graders, down to 34th, 35th, and it's going down. Look at what's happened in graduation. Between 2000 and 2010, according to the census, we were one of three states that declined. The number of high school graduates in Utah declined by 6.8% in those 10 years. By every appreciable measure, it is a catastrophe. And what do we hear out of the governor's office and out of the legislature? Well, we got big families, you know. We'd like to do something, but we can't make the commitment. The money isn't there. We're just not going to do it. We don't have the vision. We don't know where, you know, it's tough, but that's the way it is. Well, Democrats say that's not the way it is. The way it is that way is because there is no vision. We have a governor who doesn't know where education is going to be in 10 years because there isn't a plan. The Chamber of Commerce is so upset and so worried about the young people that are coming out of our state because of these huge classrooms and this lack of funding. And by the way, our teachers, they make $11,800 less per teacher than the national average. The Chamber of Commerce is so upset about what's going on in education, they set up a special group called 2020 to try to come up with a plan, to try to infuse some vision into the state. We didn't fund it this year. You shouldn't have a Chamber of Commerce coming up with your vision for education. It ought to be coming out of the legislature and out of the governor's office. It isn't there. Go back. That's just primary education. In higher education, I met with President Albright from Utah State. He said, we are down 22% in funding from 2008 to now. In actual dollar terms, 22%. You take 22% out of somebody's budget and see what happens. So the state, underlying all of this, and I'm going to get back to higher education in a minute, is a pledge that virtually all of our legislators have taken with a solemn, almost, hand to the square. They've said to Grover Cleveland, or whatever his name is, in Washington, they've made a pledge and said, we will not raise taxes, period. We haven't raised it since Bangor's time, which is in the mid-80s. We're never going to raise taxes. It doesn't matter the circumstances. We pledge never to raise taxes, so that's never an option. So as the state slides, as primary education slides off a cliff, as we become uncompetitive with Wyoming and uncompetitive with Massachusetts and Colorado and the rest, they hold fast to their pledge. And if they don't, they'll get eaten up in their convention. So as this continues to build and mount, back to higher ed, what happened? 2008 to now, 22%. So what did they do? They raised tuition. From 2008 to now, we've gone from 36% of funding from tuition to 52%. So they didn't have the guts to raise taxes. They didn't have the guts to do, there's other places to get revenue as well that we can talk about. So what did they end up doing? They ended up putting on the backs of our students to get into more debt endlessly, so that they can keep their pledge never, ever, ever to raise taxes. You talk to Stan, I know, is in the business of high tech. Marvin John Warnock, John is the chairman and founder of Adobe. They're friends of my partner and I. So 2 or 3 weeks ago, they have a place up in Deer Valley. We went up to dinner. John Warnock brought 1,000 jobs to Utah County with Adobe. $75,000 per job, plus benefits, plus no air pollution. You know what John Warnock says the problem with the state of Utah is? Our kids aren't smart enough. And they're not inherently not smart. It is we have not made the commitment to our young people because we're too busy promising never, ever, under any circumstances to look at revenue. And this is the result of this. He said, we're going to create at Adobe another 25,000 to 30,000 jobs over the next 10 years. How many of them are coming to Utah? Zero. They don't care what the property taxes are. They don't care what the income taxes are. What they care about is a lack of commitment and certainly a lack of vision in our state by our elected officials. So, I'm wrapping up here, Stan.
You're doing great.
What I'm saying is we have got to get off this pledge. When the pioneers arrived on 17th South, I spent that first night, think of the commitment they made. And when I look at my good friends in the legislature and I say, will you look at raising our severance tax? And they say, no, we're not raising any taxes. I said, these severance taxes are to the largest corporations in the world, and they're pulling resources out of the Uinta Basin and out of our state. Our severance tax is 3.3%. Wyoming, 9%. North Dakota, 12%. We have the lowest severance tax of any state that has anything to severance tax. And yet we won't think about raising taxes because we've taken the pledge and we've got to protect those large corporations. And I am telling you,
We need to take a look at our income tax. It needs to go up. We have a commitment generationally to our young people, and they are not competing. And unless we make that commitment to fund education higher and lower, we are not going to build this great, prosperous, wonderful Utah, because that is where the future is. And it's a great lack of vision and a great fear of this little clique of Tea Party people that is keeping Utah from taking its place among the great success states. Sam?
Well, that was quite entertaining. So you may have figured out by now that he is a part of the minority party, so his job is to criticize Utah. We live in a great state. And I could start reciting for you all the awards we win as a state. But here's the reality for you. There's a high likelihood that when you graduate, you'll actually get a job. We have one of the lowest unemployment rates in the nation. And so you're actually going to have a chance to earn a living when you graduate. In many states, that's not something that kids are able to look forward to, because they have high unemployment rates, and it's very difficult for college graduates to get a job. I'd suggest to you that that might be the most important thing you could be thinking about if you're a senior. So when Jim starts talking about all the problems facing our state, I would just suggest to you that because of the policies we've made, you're likely to have the ability to go out and get a good paying job, make a living for yourself and your family, and prosper. And guess what? You're going to have control over your funds. Government's not going to spend it for you. We're not going to take huge amounts of money in taxes and tell you that we know how to spend it best. And so a little bit of freedom and a little bit of liberty and a little bit of self-reliance on the part of residents, those are the types of things, those are the values that we promote in the state. And so when government doesn't raise taxes on you, that's good. That's not bad. That's good. So let's talk about public education. It's called the Utah Paradox. It's unique in the entire country. And here's the deal. We have many children, and we don't have many taxpayers. It's just the demographics. Almost one out of every four residents of the state of Utah is a school-aged child. That ratio doesn't take place anywhere else in the country. Not even close. And so when we start talking about the fact that we're 51st on a per pupil basis in funding, you can take any, you can take statistics is the art of manipulating data. And the statistics dealing with this issue is that if you take the number of children and the number of taxpayers, it's going to equal low funding per pupil. That's just simple math, right? So we shouldn't get hung up in the statistics. What we should do is look at what are the outcomes? What are we actually doing? And if you look at what Utah is doing in terms of public education, our students are getting a good education. Could they get a better education? Yes. But what are the trade-offs to do so? Well, if you're listening to Mr. DeBacchus, it's raising taxes. And it's raising taxes on business. But if we're raising taxes on them, then they don't have the money to go hire you. That's the issue. So we can either have a business-friendly state with low tax rates and a premium on hiring people and getting people jobs and getting people high-paying jobs, or we can impose lots of taxes on them, we can put the burden great so that they choose not to hire people and our unemployment rates can go up. If that's the choice, I'd rather try to figure out ways to help people get good jobs that pay decent wages. That's where I put my priorities, and I think that's where the state has put their priorities. It's on creating a business-friendly environment where our people can get good-paying jobs to provide for their families. Now, is it true that sometimes that you're paying more tuition today than you were a few years ago? Yes. We have to compare that, though, to what's happening in other places around the country. If you look at Utah tuition rates for higher education, it's still below the national average. You're getting a great deal on what you're paying in order to get a college education. And so it's not about how many times it's been increased in the last few years. It's about if you chose to go out of state to go to school, what would you end up paying? And I'm telling you, it's worth going to school in Utah and getting a college degree. By the way, that bio was a bit out of date, and it's a bit weighted towards the BYU experience. So I was sitting there going, oh, boy, I'm not sure I'd like to lead with that. But my middle daughter is a University of Utah student, and she's majoring in chemical engineering. And I'm telling you, everything Ute is going on in her life. And she is a passionate defender of your institution, and she's a great representative. And so in my home, we now have to wear half blue and half red. And by the way, we've got one of the best engineering programs in the country right here at the University of Utah. And so that's kind of cool that she's doing that. Let's talk a little bit about, I'm a part of Prosperity 2020 that Jim talked about, and this push on the part of the business community to do some things differently in education is important. We need to have the people who are hiring tell the people who are educating, here's what we need in those who want to come work for us. And that essentially is what is happening. They're saying, look, we've got to do better in terms of preparing our kids to deal with the realities of a 21st century work environment. And sometimes there's a disconnect between what education does and what the business community needs. And so we should all be encouraged by the fact that the business community is saying, here are the skill sets that are needed for our workforce. Please provide the education necessary to get them those skill sets. And so that's what we're doing. Here's an interesting, you know, I've talked about how statistics can be manipulated. Here's the positive statistic in response to some of Jim's more negative statistics. This year we had a surplus. We had new growth in the state above and beyond the previous year of somewhere around $400 million. 70% of it went to education. So when you look at the priorities of our state government and you look at where they're putting their money, they're putting the money into education. But when you start going to a per pupil basis and you start going to some of those statistics, of course we're going to be low because we have lots and lots of kids. And that's valued in our state. We believe that children are our greatest resource. And so people have lots of kids in their families. And that's all right. But the trade-off for that, particularly when you don't have the tax base necessary, is you're going to have a low per pupil funding ratio. Now, here's something interesting that happened about 8 years ago. For 50 years, when we had governors running for office from both the Democrat Party and the Republican Party, all they talked about was public education. I mean, that was the issue every election. How are we going to fund public education? And it's interesting because the governor has no constitutional or statutory authority regarding education in the state of Utah. So it's kind of ironic that that is the main issue every single time that we have an election. Because it is the state school board and the legislature that control education. The legislature funds it, and the state school board's supposed to manage it. And then it goes down to the districts and goes down to the schools and goes down to the teachers. And so every 4 years, as long as I've been alive, that's what happened. And in 2004, John Huntsman Jr. came along and he said, you know, yeah, education is extremely important. We need to work on education and doing it better and more effectively and figuring out how to get more resources for it. But the way to do that is to grow the economy. And what I'm going to suggest to you is that as we create a pro-business economy that looks at minimal reasonable regulations, that looks at low tax rates, that is a pro-growth agenda, that as we grow the tax base, as we make it bigger, we'll have more resources to give to education and to other essential government services. And that's what's happened. So he came in and immediately started doing these pro-business policies in the state of Utah. And over the last 8 years, our economy has grown faster than just about any other state in the country. And what does that mean? Jobs for you when you graduate. 30 years ago when I moved to the state, actually it was about 33 years ago, when kids graduated from college, they could not find jobs. They left the state. Our kids couldn't stay here, so grandparents had to travel in order to see their grandkids. Today, our kids are getting jobs in the state. They're staying here. And grandma and grandpa can go drive an hour and see the grandkids. So there's some value in the opportunity to actually have jobs available for kids that are graduating for college. And I'd suggest to you, as you start thinking about this issue of education, that's some of the trade-off. Yeah, we can tax the snot out of business. Tax them. Let's get more money. Let's go tax them. The trade-off is they won't hire you when you graduate. Then what do you do? So that's what we're up against. Anyway.
Wyoming. The great state of Wyoming. $16,800 per kid. Utah, $6,000 per kid. Is the product going to be the same? 48% of our Hispanic kids don't graduate. Go down, as I've done, to the elementary schools down here, and you pick out which half of our Hispanic kids we're not going to graduate. You pick them out. You say, okay, you're going to graduate, you're not. You're not, you are. That is a catastrophe. And even if you can't look at that on the human basis, to know that we are losing half of our Hispanic kids, just look at it from a dollar and cent point of view. They're still going to get married. They're still going to have families. They're still going to get minimum wage jobs. And the problems that come from that are cataclysmic. And I stood on the floor of the Senate and heard senators say there is no education gap, which is the gap between our white kids graduating and our minorities. That is a ticking time bomb. And there is no plan in this state to deal with that. And I don't buy this. You know what? If we spend more money on education, then businesses aren't going to come. Well, not the kind of businesses that the governor has brought here, so many of them, which is phone answering businesses. But the Adobes, they want an educated workforce, and they're willing to pay. You get back, the legislature, speaking of funding education, 100% of the state income tax goes to education. 100%. They put a flat tax in. They tapped it at 5% and said it'll be revenue neutral. It's cost $180 to $200 million a year directly from education since we instituted that. I mean, this is not an either or. This is we either make the commitment to education. Let me tell you how the process works. As a business guy, I was appalled. In January, the legislature had no idea how much money they were going to give to education that year. That year. Never mind a 5-10 year plan for funding education. You got a business, you better have a spreadsheet that says where you're going. The legislature waits until February to see where the revenues are coming. And then they say, we had good revenues this year, so we're going to be able to fund growth this year. That is no way. That shows no vision. It is not the way to run a business. It's not the way to run a family. And it's certainly not the way to run a state. And that's the way it goes now. We need some vision that says, here's where we're going to be in 10 years. Here's how we're going to get our graduation rates. And this idea of, well, we got too many kids. You know what? We have an obligation. We as a society, we as a culture, we as a state have an obligation. We don't line up our kids and say, you know what, there's too many of you. You eat, you don't. And this, it's too easy to say, well, we got too many kids, so we're not going to make the commitment necessary. We need to set that goal to be 45th in the country in funding. I know it's hard, but our goal ought to be 45th. And we shouldn't be comfortable and say, oh, well, there's plenty of other states that are creating jobs and good-paying jobs because they're educating their kids. You talk about having no opportunity for good-paying jobs, you watch the decline of our education system and our achievement scores, and you look at a pretty gloomy future. That's how we're going to compete. We're not going to compete with China or Colorado by having low-wage, kind of not well-educated kids. We're going to compete because we have that commitment to education. That's where I think Democrats and Republicans differ. I'm all for creating jobs, but we need an education system that's going to create more Adobes and less call center jobs.
Yeah, I'm still not sure where the call center thing's coming from, because I don't think our state has been overly inviting to call centers above and beyond others. I think they've been more overly inviting to tech companies recently. As I work for a company called IM Flash, and it's a joint venture between Intel and Micron, and it's really cool. We've got 7% of the world market coming out of Lehi, Utah for flash memory chips, which is tens of millions of chips every year. Maybe even, it's a lot of flash memory chips coming out of Lehi. And it's some of the most advanced technology in the world. There are hundreds and hundreds of patents that are implemented into our process every year. And it's a huge market, and we're competing in a global economy, and we're going up against some of the biggest companies in the world, Samsung and Toshiba and others we're competing with, and we're out-innovating them. Right now, we are leading the world in terms of technology on putting more power in a smaller place with those flash memory chips. And it's happening in Utah. How cool is that? And I can tell you that without a pro-business environment, without an environment that allows us to compete on the global stage, we couldn't be here. It couldn't happen. And so, and those 1,600 and some odd jobs in Lehi, Utah wouldn't be able to be here. So education is really important. I think Jim highlights that when he's talking about it, and of course he has passion around it. But the fact of the matter is, if you can't get a job after you graduate, then what's the point of getting an education? Sure, it makes us better members of the community, makes us more responsible, and gives us better thought processes in making decisions for our lives. But it's kind of like Jerry Maguire, show me the money. And he'll say that show me the money is about raising taxes, and I'll tell you show me the money is about a person getting a job. What's more important? And I'd say it's getting a job. And you gotta take it into your own life and say, how does it affect me? And we can talk about how things should be, coulda, woulda, shoulda. And there's no question we can improve. And we should be trying to improve. Jim's right. But the metric isn't to be 45th in the country on a per pupil basis. That's not the improvement. The improvement's test scores. The improvement is are our kids getting the skills they need to compete in a workforce and to get those jobs. And I'd suggest to you that there is a need for more strategy. There is a need to do better. Jim's right. Our state should do better. Long-term plan for education, that's positive. I think we should probably do more in that area. But the answer isn't, Jim's using the words commitment and resources, and we need to do better at this. And all those words are code words for more taxes. Do you really want more taxes as the trade-off? And it's interesting. Tax thee, tax he, tax everyone around the tree, but don't tax me. And if you look at the national level, that's kind of what they... Well, it's got, share the wealth. Spread the wealth. I mean, it's craziness. What we need is a little more freedom to actually earn a paycheck and keep the money and make those decisions for ourselves. Because I guarantee you know how to spend money for your vested interest better than I do. So that's the issue here. It's not should we improve education. We should improve education. Frankly, there are 21st century skills that are needed. Our kids are called digital natives. In my generation and Jim's generation,
I'm a lot older than you are, Stan.
You guys can take an app and within 5 minutes figure out how to use it. I go onto my iPhone, I can't even figure out how to download an app. Okay? How do we take those skills that you have and get more productivity in the workforce with them? How do we use them in a way that allows the company that you go to work for, or let's say we have actually quite an entrepreneurial culture anymore. Maybe you're going out and starting your own business. But how do we allow you to take those skills that you have that really are very cool and use them so that you can benefit society and maybe even change the world in some cool way? That's what we should be figuring out how to do with education. How do we help you help the world that you live in, making it a better place? You know, my daughter's in chemical engineering. Well, they make the world a better place by inventing stuff and creating patents. In political science, how do we make the world a better place? we figure out a place where we can make a difference, where our time and our talents and our efforts can create some measurable benefit for society. And how do we help you do that? That's what education should be about, right? So it's not the amount of money you put into it. It's what is the output? It's what's the outcome? It's what are you going to be like when you graduate? And what skills and capabilities are you going to have that are going to benefit the world around you? That's what I'm interested in trying to figure out. Not how to just have more money for more money's sake. Look, Wyoming has more money per pupil for a couple of reasons. That statistics I gave you, they have fewer kids per capita, and they have lots of taxpayers. And most of their taxes come through natural resources. It comes from oil and gas and comes from natural resources. They have more of it than we do. And they have fewer people. They only have 500,000 people in the entire state. We've got 600,000 kids in the school system alone. So using Wyoming as a comparison is a bad comparison. In fact, really, there's no other state in the country that has the demographics we do. And so here's, as a business person, here's what happens to me. I have constrained resources as a business person. I have a budget at my job, and I'm not getting $1 more. And they say, Stan, go succeed in the area that we've given you. Here's the amount of money. It's not going up. You can't come back to us and ask for more. Here's your job description. Go do it. I do it. I innovate. I do things more efficiently. I do things better. I try to think outside the box and say, what are all the other people in my profession doing? What could I do that's different than they're doing and get better outcomes? That's what we need to be doing in education.
We've tried that for 30 years.
And it's worked.
Look at the objective product is the test scores, which are declining precipitously.
Still above the national average.
Give us another generation, we'll be so far below. Look, we're looking up to Mississippi and Alabama, $1,000 per kid less.
You're back to that per pupil funding.
Okay. Because it's significant.
It's
you're pretending
not.
It doesn't matter.
It's not significant.
You go to a car lot and say, I give you $20,000 and I got 10, and you say, money doesn't matter. What do you mean money doesn't matter? Money matters. And it's some illusionary world to say, money doesn't matter in education or in housing or in shopping for clothes. Money matters. And let me tell you something. The Utah Petroleum Association, they matter. The severance tax, as we pull money out of the Uinta Basin, as they're fracking and cutting and pouring and pulling things out, we have a boom going on, just like Wyoming, where all this money comes out of. And the governor piled hundreds of thousands of dollars from that industry when he ran. $80,000 here for a table or a donation or whatever. We have no campaign limits. And the Utah legislature, look at their list. They are bought off by the Utah Petroleum Association for small amounts of money, $5,000, $10,000, whatever. Why don't we have a severance tax that is like other states? Because our legislators listen to the Petroleum Association. What could be hundreds of millions of dollars by just putting the Utah severance tax where it is in the other western states doesn't happen. Because we sell out for cheap lobbyists. And our kids get cheated. Those multinational corporations, they're coming in, they're getting our resources one time only. We ought to have the same severance tax as our neighboring states, but we don't. The Utah Petroleum Association takes their gets on this long list of who they donate to, along with a lot of other lobbyists that say money doesn't matter. Well, if it doesn't matter, then put the severance tax up. Are they going to take all their oil somewhere else, to Colorado or Illinois or somewhere? That's where we're being cheated. That's where our young people are being cheated. Because our legislators are listening too much to these lobbyists who have a very strong position. For me, when it comes down to, am I going to look our kids in the face or the Petroleum Association? All too often, they go with the Petroleum Association. And as far as we can't create jobs, you wait a generation or two, And you watch what happens if our education continues to decline. We're simply not going to be able to compete with other states, never mind with Asia, where these huge, where this huge emphasis goes into education. Maybe we should talk about something else. I'll give you the last word, Stan. I get worked up about education.
Frankly, I think it's a great topic.
Okay.
It's a great topic.
You guys, would you like to talk about something else?
Well, we have time for a couple questions. We have about 5 minutes. Let's go to some questions.
That's all? Sorry.
No, it's good.
So,
it's 50% of our budget. You know, you really should be a Republican, because that's a Republican concept. And so Republicans like use taxes. We like people to pay for what they use. You're acting as if somehow there's no balance today. And the fact of the matter is, every 2 years, House members run for re-election, and every 4 years, senators run for re-election. And they run based on what they run, and they campaign, and they talk about these exact issues with their constituents. And then their constituents choose to elect them. And then those group of people, those are our decision makers, and so they go up and start making laws. And based on that process of people wanting a certain type of government, that is what we've gotten in the state of Utah. You get what you elect. And so that's balance true. Has taken place. The people have chosen, and they've chosen the system we have. Now, your point that maybe there are some innovative ways to create revenue and that maybe it should be more along the line of what you consume, that is, boy, I couldn't agree with you more. How do you do that? How do you create a system? You know, we've talked about a national sales tax, getting rid of the income tax, getting rid of some of these other taxes, and making it all based on consumption, because that's essentially what a sales tax is, right? But there are some challenges when you go down those roads. There's some stability issues. There are some other issues. So I guess the answer to your question is, first of all, we've already chosen a particular balance. What Jim is suggesting is that it's the wrong balance. What I'm suggesting is that it's not a bad balance at all. Are there some improvements to be made? We have that debate every single year in the legislature. They're always talking about what type of a tax system we should have, whether you should raise them, whether you should shift them, whether you should do a whole bunch of things. So the answer is yes, there are some changes that may make sense. And as our economy changes and as people have different purchasing habits and they have different consumption habits, we need to figure that out and say to ourselves, what is the fairest way for people to pay their share of essential government services? You're right. Does that help?
I'll be really brief so we can get to some other questions. We do have that debate. Unfortunately, it's tainted by gerrymandering. The redistricting that the legislature did 2 years ago is shameful. It took Democratic areas like Ogden. There's about 100,000 people in Ogden. It ought to have one senator. It would have been a Democratic seat. Or Tooele, which traditionally has been a Democratic area and would have been, or Summit County, and it divided them up. I mean, sometimes shamelessly. Tooele, in the last redistricting, ended up, they had to cut it up three ways in order to make sure a Democrat wasn't elected, but you still have to get 100,000 constituents. So they started in Tooele and they ended up in Four Corners to get the 100,000 people. So they have been ruthlessly unfair in making this map. So as Republicans say, as my good friends say, you know, there's an election every year. Well, they go off to all those special interests, and they're there at the governor's table, and he's raising $1,200,000 at one dinner from all of those special interests, and then he's running out and going, and you get into these gerrymandered thing. I'm not saying we're not competitive, and we will be, but it's not a fair playing field because of the way that things have gone. But we're confident that once we get our message out and say, these guys have all taken a pledge that they won't raise taxes no matter what. That is a bad, bad, bad thing. And we do have a better way. And Utah Democrats are moderate. We're reasonable. We're not for huge, tremendous things in budget increases. But we do think that people ought to pay a fair tax. We ought to get that $180 million a year back to education. We ought to be helping young people out a lot more and not doing our duty as a state to help them and forcing them to go out and get huge loans that, frankly, are not going to be good for our economy in the next 10 years as they get out and get their families going. And instead of spending money at R.C. Willie, they're paying back student loans. That's not good for an economy.
So I smile a little bit when I listen to Jim talk because he really is entertaining. I really enjoyed this
Thank you.
Morning. And I'm glad that you finally found a topic other than education to talk about. So let's talk a little bit about how lines are drawn during this process called redistricting. First of all, here is the definition of gerrymandering. Have you filed a lawsuit in federal court and have you won? Utah is one of maybe the only state that has never had a lawsuit filed over their redistricting maps. And guess who the entity is that has standing in order to file that lawsuit? It's the party that Jim represents. So they've not filed a lawsuit. Why? Because all the attorneys say you can't win. So if you can't win a lawsuit that accuses Republicans of gerrymandering, by definition, it's not gerrymandered.
If you want to use the legal definition, it's fine. If you want to use the moral definition of cutting up Ogden three ways and say that's okay, I'm with you.
But that is the definition. In other states, when Democrats feel like there's been true gerrymandering, and by the way, there have been, and there have been in other states, they've filed lawsuits and they've won. And in states where the Democrats are in control and they're drawing the lines, Republicans have exactly the same opportunity. And we filed from time to time, and we've won. And so the federal courts are very sensitive over this issue of gerrymandering. And so the idea that somehow there's been gerrymandering when they've not filed a lawsuit, they've not even filed it, let alone won it. So it's just hot air when you say it's been gerrymandered. Here's the fact of the matter.
If you'd give us the $500,000 they've said it would take to run the gerrymandering, maybe we win, maybe we wouldn't, then I'd be happy to go take it to court.
Your national party, though, should do it.
It's quite clear when you have Ogden and you split it up three ways and there's only one explanation that makes any sense at all, and that explanation is if you let Ogden stay as an entity, a Democrat would be elected, but if you split it up three ways, you'd get three Republicans. I mean, if you look around the state and you see a concentration of Democrats, and it's by any definition gerrymandering.
We had the most open process in the history of the state this year. They had an online tool where anybody could come and write their own maps. And then the group that was making the redistricting committee, they looked at every map, and they evaluated it. Here's the problem. You have a number of people. It's 2.8 million. So in the Senate districts, it's like 95,000 for every Senate district. You've got to draw the line somewhere. So Ogden this year may have had three senators representing them. But no matter where you draw the line, someone's going to lose.
Just so happens that it's always the Democrats that lose. And the best open system in history, let me tell you what happened. We had 34 meetings all across the state. We had this committee that went and heard testimony. They had this draw the map they spent millions on. The Xoro group went and told what a wonderful thing we had. What happened? When they actually drew the maps, they threw themselves into closed caucus, slammed the door, hammered it out, cut up their own districts, came marching out of that caucus,
to the floor like robots. They all went, yep, to a map that not one Utahn had ever seen. That's openness. Then, my friend, we have a different definition of what openness is, because that's the process.
So, Jim, how do you really feel about that topic?
That hurts us for a generation. So, it hurts Utahns. And that's why I'm passionate about the redistricting. Our participation in the system has gone down dramatically in conjunction. You watch the voter participation, where we were fourth or fifth in the nation in 1980 to now, where we're fourth or fifth from the bottom. There's a direct correlation between the Republicans in Utah gerrymandering and the public's participation in our electoral system.
Now, that's an issue that I'd like to talk about. By the way, all this hue and cry over he doesn't have the $500,000 to pay for it. The National Democrat Party will pay to help you file the lawsuit if there's really a case. There was no case. There was no gerrymandering. They couldn't even justify filing the suit. So that's why it didn't happen. But on to participation.
Money in Washington.
But on to participation in government.
I would have taken.
We have a trend going on in this state that is very troubling to me. And it's the fact that we, 30 years ago, we had some of the highest voter turnout in the nation. And now we're getting down towards some of the lowest voter turnout in the nation. And it's a real problem. And we've been trying to figure out what to do in order to change that dynamic. And both parties have gone to the legislature and asked for more transparency in the election process. We've asked for more openness, and we've asked for the ability for voters to get maximum opportunity to have to cast their vote. And so we've got some things going on right now, and the legislature doesn't always listen to the parties, frankly. They're pretty an independent group of people. This idea that somehow they're never going to raise taxes, yeah, for two or three of them, I think that's probably true. But for the body, you give them a really clear outcome where the benefits of raising those taxes, the ROI is clear to the people of the state of Utah, and they will raise taxes. I mean, it's not we'll never raise them. It's just that fundamentally they understand that you're better prepared to spend your own money than they are. And so it's got to be a really powerful reason for them to raise them before they do. They're not just going to do it for, you know, the sake of doing it. But this idea of getting more people involved in voting is really important, because the fewer people that get involved in this process, the worse your quality of government gets over time. And so how do we get more people involved in that? Well, we're very passionate defenders of our caucus convention system, because it allows someone with virtually no resources to get elected if they have better ideas and better thoughts about how to govern than others do. And if you go to open primaries, the person with the most money most of the time wins. And so it's not necessarily a great process to change our... We like the caucus convention system. But there's this group out there that on the basis of wanting to get more people involved are asking for some changes. And it's a very real threat to our process. And we're trying to figure out how to deal with that. And I keep saying to myself, how do I get more people involved? How do I get the average person who today is not voting, how do I get them to vote? And we don't have the answers yet, but we better start. That is a key point that we better start thinking about. Because your generation, by and large, they're not voting. We need to figure out how to get them to vote. And frankly, there have been two or three generations now of our kids that aren't out there voting. And we've got to make government relevant enough for them to motivate them to somehow cast a ballot. And I'm not sure that the traditional method of having to go into a voting booth on election day is something that we have to do. You know, we've instituted early voting. We've got vote by mail. I mean, it's not, we're trying. We want more people to participate. But we haven't stopped the trend yet. We haven't yet got, even with a native Utah son or an adopted native Utah son running for president of the United States, we could not get the highest voting turnout in the history of our state.
I swear.
It's a problem. And so we need good thinkers to try to figure this thing out with us. We're all trying to figure it out. And so far, we haven't found the magic formula to make it work. But somehow we've got to keep people involved. The way that our representative, that our republic, and America is a republic, the way that it was formed was through this representation, and that we would send representatives to represent us and to govern. And to the extent that we have people who are engaged, our founders knew that as long as the public was engaged, as long as they participated, we would do very well as a nation. But what happens when they check out and they stop participating and they aren't
discounting
getting involved?
Tuition, maybe.
Maybe that's it. Maybe that's it. But we need help on that. And it's a huge concern to me and to Jim and to others that are involved in this process. Somehow we've got to get people willing to go to the polls and vote and willing to become educated on what the choices are and what the merits of voting for one person over another might be.
I agree 100%, Stan.
We have about 4 minutes remaining on air. Dallin, you have the next question.
Okay. My name is Dallin Johnson. I'm an economics student here at the U. I focus on econometrics. And I'm getting ready to pursue a master's in statistics, pursuing econometrics as well. So I'm one of those manipulators.
Seems fun. I'd like to do that.
So my question is, earlier you were referring to student spending and unemployment numbers. Student spending is a parameter calculated with an entire population that has a direct correlation to education success in a state, whereas unemployment is something done by the Bureau of Labor Statistics that at maximum surveys 1,000 people in Utah per month. It's purely a statistic with a really high error rate. So I was wondering, how is education, spending per pupil in education, a manipulated statistic, but unemployment is an actual reliable statistic?
Stan, I'll let you take that one.
Yeah, it sounds to me like you know more about it than I do. But the truth of the matter is, our Labor Department gets reports from employers every month. And the survey of 1,000 people is one metric that is used to get maybe a particular number. It's the official one. But they have a whole bunch of other ways of gathering that data. Every employer has to report to our Workforce Services Department every month on who they've hired and who. And there's a whole variety of statistics that they gather.
That calculates the employment number. The number of unemployment or of employed is possible, but in terms of calculating the entire population and ratio.
Again, it's all statistics, right?
So
let's go back to spending per pupil. What does that actually tell you? That tells you an input number. It doesn't tell you the quality of what you're getting. It doesn't tell you it doesn't tell you if we're matching up the type of education with what employers want, if we're giving kids the skills that they're really going to need to compete. It is one measure that is not, that doesn't, it's not well suited for the state of Utah because we have so many kids and so few taxpayers.
It has a direct correlation though with education quality.
Let me give you some things to think about. If you go look at the per pupil funding around the country, and you go look at the five highest states, they have some of the worst test scores.
It's not a direct correlation, but if you're going to, I'll go back to the car.
Washington, D.C., highest in the country.
If you're going out to buy a new car, you want a lot of money in your pocket or a little money? Maybe there isn't a direct correlation between what you drive off the lot with, but I'd rather go out with more money than less money. And to say somehow that money really doesn't matter really seems to me defies reality. Of course it does. We would rather be 25th than 51st, wouldn't we?
If you taxed every dollar of every company and every person in this state at 100% tax rate, you could not get past the 25th mark.
Wait a minute, 100% of their income?
100% of their income.
No. I mean,
you couldn't raise it enough to get in the top quartile of this country in per pupil funding.
Well, because I run a model with education quality in terms of test scores, in terms of like overall satisfaction with education. I mean, there's a whole bunch of different statistics, demographic, like race, poverty line, and all those have a really high correlation, but spending per pupil also definitely has a very high correlation with the voter.
But again, go look at the states that have the highest per pupil funding, and Minnesota. You cannot get the test score correlation that you're talking about. Some of the worst test scores in the country go to the states with the highest per pupil funding. So there's not a direct correlation. Jim's right. Look, No one disagrees that if there's more money, you can do some additional things to get better outcomes. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that as you measure it on a per pupil basis and you keep hammering, we're 51st, we need to do better, you need to take the demographics and understand that those demographics don't favor Utah. But if you talk, about more money, and I think we should, we had $400 million and almost $300 million of it went to education this year in new money. Do you think that's a priority? Do you think the legislature prioritized education? I'd say that's an incredible prioritization.
I don't think so. I got two problems with that.
70%!
I got two problems with that. Most of that money went to pay for the 14,300 new kids that...
Not most of it. Less than 100 million did that.
75 million.
78 million. I think that's true. But almost 300 went to education.
All right. So, and too much of the rest of it goes to voucher bills, which I discovered this time.
No.
Special little carve-outs. The representative so-and-so from such-and-such a county says, we need a reading bill. And then he writes the reading bill. And the reading bill says... All right, we're going to spend $5 million on reading software, and guess what? This reading software will be open to public bid, but it has to be in XYZ County.
Do I get the last word?
And it has to have, and this company has to have between 65 and 68 employees, and the chairman of this company has to have graduated from Princeton with a degree in backpack design.
We only have 30 seconds.
And then it'll go completely... There. So
do I get the last word?
They take the small amount of money. I'm not. We'll still keep talking. It's just that it goes out. Okay. I'm saying voucher. A lot of that money went off to these special little charter school kind of voucher projects for individual.
That is not true.
Yeah. Right.
Okay. Here's the deal, you guys. I'm a part of Prosperity 2020. He's touted Prosperity 2020 as being one of the answers to our education challenges. Part of it. I was in charge of STEM education this year. The legislature gave $10 million to science, technology, engineering, and math education.
I voted for it.
And I helped get that passed.
You didn't thank me.
Thank you very much. So all these little one-offs that he's talking about, you tell me that strategically trying to get our kids better educated in science and math isn't a strategic method to get more jobs at Adobe in the future. That's all it is. It's strategic investment. It's not special interest oriented. It's strategic. You got to strategically say, what skill set do I want our kids to have? And that's what you fund.
But I'm not talking about STEM.
And that's what we've done.
I'm not talking about STEM. See, I got him going. See, he does have some enthusiasm.
Well, only because I was leading that charge and because I'm because I'm passionate about it. I work for a tech company where I see them changing the world every day.
I'm talking about Howard Stevenson's $5 million for a reading voucher bill vendor bills. There's lots of these vendor bills. So we get that precious $200 million on the great year, and then what's left is they plop it out to these charters and to these special interests. They don't go into the general fund to help do what we really need to do.
When you get a job,
that's the point I'm making.
I want you to thank the legislature that they created a pro-business environment that allowed companies to be able to hire you.
And when you get a job that doesn't pay as much as Massachusetts or Illinois or California, I want you to thank the legislature for not having the kind of educational opportunities for all Utahns to attract those kind of companies here.
We have 2.5 minutes remaining on air. One last question on air.
I think my question is less controversial. My name is Tyler Calder. I'm an econ major here. My question is, in your opinion, do you feel like candidates, when they're running for office, should more represent their own values and systems, or do you think that they should more try to align themselves with the political parties?
Both. You affiliate with a party because you believe in the principles that party espouses. And in the Republican Party, it's really simple. I go back to the Declaration of Independence. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they're endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and that the purpose of government is to secure those rights. That's the Republican Party in a nutshell. We want to give you freedom, we want to give you liberty, and the way to do that is to not tax the snot out of you, and to not take all of your money, and to not overly regulate you so that you can't be free in a free society.
I can't resist, but the word nutshell in the Republic.
Sorry.
I won't go there. Look, we believe as Democrats in the economic, in capitalism. I mean, I believe, I'm a business guy.
Spread the wealth is capitalism? Spread the wealth?
I'm for
that. Capitalism?
But I also believe in equality. I believe in equality of opportunity. I believe that every one of our citizens ought to have the right to be at the table. I believe that Hispanics, and I believe that women, and I believe that gay people are real people. I believe that they ought to have the same rights as everybody else. And there's a lot of things that go beyond, that include life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness that on a fundamental basis, a lot of Republicans just don't believe, that I do believe.
Freedom and liberty, inside your hearts, we all want to be free. Spread the wealth is not about freedom and liberty. The redistribution of wealth is not going to give you maximum freedom in your lives, to raise your families, to live your life, to pull up your boots every morning and go into the world and try to make it on your own.
And we're out of time. Let's express appreciation to our guest today.